Welcome to Gateway's podcast. We hope God speaks to you through this message from one of our pastors. For more information about Gateway, please visit www.gatewaybc.com.
Well, good morning. My name is Brandon. I'm the student pastor here at Gateway, and I am filling in for Don this morning because he and his wife are out on vacation. And so I wanted to talk to you guys, have that opportunity. And before I jump in, I just want to say something. Thank you so much for the way that you guys have supported our student ministry. We've been doing the youth work days. And you guys have just had just an overwhelming amount of compassion and generosity towards providing those opportunities for our students to work. And you've been more than generous in what you've been giving them. And so it means a lot to me for the way you guys have supported the student ministry. And it means a lot to our students and helping them out to be able to make trips more affordable for them to be able to go on. And so I just wanted to say thank you. I don't know if it's because you love our students so much or because you hate yard work that much. But either way, we'll take it on, all right? Whatever you want to do. And you guys are incredibly generous, and you've seen this through the announcements and whatnot. But next week, we're going to be doing Tithe Your Closet, which is an awesome opportunity for us to be able to give back and help those who are in need. And so basically, you just grab clothes or shoes or jackets or whatever is kind of gently used that you've got and you don't need anymore, and just go ahead and pull that out, put it in bags, and then next week, between 8 and 12 Sunday morning, you can drop those right off in front of the worship center. There will be people there. We're going to try and fill up an entire 18-wheeler trailer just of clothes to go towards the cooperative ministry to help out with people who need that. And so it's just an awesome opportunity. The insert's in your bulletin with all the details and everything I'm probably forgetting or telling you wrong. So look there too, just to make sure. But guys, this is an awesome opportunity for you to help you get your wife some of those clothes out of there so you can have a little bit of the closet too, right? Right? So it's like actually one little corner on the side there. But yeah, last week was Easter, and so we celebrated the resurrection of Jesus and the awesomeness that goes with that. And so as I was considering what to talk about this morning, I started to look at the people that Jesus encountered on his way to the cross. And so this morning, I want to look at one of the people that Jesus encountered on his way to the cross, because I think there's a lot that we can learn from this individual. And so we're going to be in John 18 this morning. So if you got your Bible, you can go ahead and start flipping there, John 18, 28. It's also going to be on the screens. If you don't have your Bible, that's totally fine. But before we dive into that, I want to ask you guys a question, all right? And you can be honest. How many of you struggle to make a decision, right? A decision comes around, and maybe it's not because you don't want to make the decision. You're just not sure that you're going to make the right decision, right? And you want to be so sure that you don't make the wrong decision. Some of you are like trying to decide if you're going to raise your hand or not. You're like, is he talking to me? I don't know. Right, okay, that's you, all right? So you're the one that struggles with that. It's so interesting. Our small group, we just went through a small group study together, and it's called I Said This, You Heard That. And it's basically a study on your temperament. Now, your temperament is different than your personality. Your personality is affected by birth order and kind of circumstances and events throughout your life, but your temperament is something that you were born with, and it's the way that you're wired, and it affects the way that you hear words and how people say certain things. And so maybe you said something to somebody and you meant it one way and they took it a completely different way, right? That's based off of their temperament. So this study is off of Ephesians 4:29, which says, "Let no unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful and useful for building others up according to their needs." Because the words that we hear, we interpret based off of our wiring. And so it's learning about how to communicate to people, whether it's the gospel or trying to communicate love based off of how they need to hear that and understand it. Using those words. I want to share with you the four different types of temperaments this morning that you're one of these, okay? So we have, first of all, the yellow, and they speak the language of people and fun. And you know exactly who this person is because they start talking before they ever even enter the door, before anybody's there to listen. And they come in and they're just like, woo, right? I mean, it's like, it's the life of the party, the fun people, the people that you like, you want to be around. They speak the language of people and fun, and they're awesome to be around, and it's so much fun. And then there's the reds, who speak the language of power and control. If there's an opportunity for them to lead, they're going to step into that leadership role. And even if there's not an opportunity for them to lead, they may take leadership anyway, right? We have three people that in our small group that are reds, and we just started affectionately calling them jerks. So it's all right. My wife is a red too, so I call her a jerkette. But there's green, They speak the language of calm and harmony. They just want everybody to get along, everybody to have a good time. You know, to make sure that everything's kind of going right, just that calm and harmony. And then there's the blue temperament, which speaks the language of perfection and order. And these are the people that want to make sure that they make the right decision. This is probably one of the best temperaments that you can have. It's also the one that I happen to have, right? So I'm a little bit jaded towards that. But I want to make sure that before I make a decision, that it's the absolute right decision. That I thought through all of the possibilities of how this decision might affect other things. You know, some people may call you, if you're this way too, maybe they call you indecisive or perfectionist. But with any of the temperaments, you can choose to operate in your strengths or your weaknesses. And so some of the weaknesses for mine are hesitant to start projects, spends too much time planning, indecisive. And for me, where this comes out between my blue and my wife's red is that every time we build something, it comes out in that. So we've built a little workshop, and then we built a deck last year. And when you start with anything like that, you got to get the foundation set. And it is vitally important that it's right. And so where this comes out is that when we start to lay those four corners of where everything is going to kind of be built up off of, we find squares. So you run a tape measure from corner to corner, and then you flip it to the other corner and the other corner. And you're trying to get those numbers to match because you want it to be square, not a parallelogram, right? And so we'll go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And I'm like, all right, we're getting close. And she's like, we're within a 16th of an inch, Brandon. It's okay. And I'm like, no, it's got to be perfect, right? Like, I want those numbers to be exact, or I know that when I'm standing on the deck, I'm gonna be like, it's a little bit off, right? So it's the way that, like, that indecisiveness, so it can, like, cripple me in trying to make those decisions because I just want it to be right, right? It's based on my temperament. That's the way I'm wired, right? But you can choose to operate off your weaknesses or off of your strengths. But I'm going to guess that blues aren't the only ones who sometimes struggle to make a decision. Matter of fact, I can guarantee that a lot of you will leave here this morning, get in your car, and indecisiveness will strike. Because there's going to be a question that's going to come up. And it's this. Where are we going to eat? And there will be arguments in the car in the church parking lot before you even leave. Praise Jesus, no, you're wrong, right? I mean, like, it happens that quick, right? And one of you is going to go, hey, where do you want to go? The other one's going to say, it doesn't matter to me. I'll go anywhere, right? And then they go, hey, well, what about Mexican? Oh, man. Anywhere but there, right? And you're like, you just said anywhere, right? I'm like, how can this happen? But it strikes every week, right? That indecisiveness of what we're going to do. And I mean, this is, you know, it could be little decisions, right? I think all of us struggle with some of this sometimes. It can be little things like, you know, where are we going to eat or what are we going to wear today? Like when your child or your parent or whoever goes into their closet, clothes are just flying out of there because they can't decide what to wear. And sometimes we struggle with making those little decisions, but sometimes we struggle with bigger decisions, right? Like, what am I going to do after high school? What kind of career am I going to chase down? What am I going to do with my career? When do I know my career is over? Who do I marry? What do I do with retirement? What do I do now that I'm retired, right? I mean, there's lots of big questions that sometimes we can struggle with too. And this indecisiveness that sometimes we all face can also play a role in our faith. Maybe you're here this morning and you're trying to make that decision of whether or not you want to follow Jesus. And you're not sure about that. You have a lot of questions. Or maybe you've made that decision to follow Jesus and now you're like, I don't know what actually comes next. Matter of fact, I feel like there's probably about three groups of us here this morning that as we kind of dig through all of this. One is maybe you came last week for the first time. And you were like, you know what? They're not that bad. Nobody bit me the entire service. Like, it's awesome, okay? Like, and it seems like the people, like, you guys actually kind of like each other. Like, this is kind of cool, right? So you came back, and maybe you've already made that decision to follow Jesus, or maybe you haven't, and you're asking those questions, and that's awesome. Like, if you're working through that, trying to figure out who Jesus is and what that means for you, keep asking those questions. That's incredible. We want to help you out in that process as well. But maybe you're here, and you've made that decision to follow Jesus, and you're trying to figure out what's next. What do I need to do from here? What is my next step? Or maybe you've been following Jesus for a really long time and you still run into situations where it's really difficult to stand up for who Jesus is in your life. That you've come to some decisions, and because you've made that decision to follow Jesus, it should impact the way you make a decision, but sometimes it's really difficult to stand with Jesus. And so, you see, when we're unsure about where we stand when it comes to Jesus in our life, it impacts us and impacts the people around us. Because if Jesus really is who he says he is, it's going to affect what happens next. So I want to look at a guy that encountered Jesus today. He couldn't quite decide what to make of Jesus either. His name is Pilate. Jesus encounters Pilate. Now, Pilate was the sixth Roman governor of Judea, reigned from about AD 26 to 36. And so he was there. He wanted to obviously advance. He was not very well liked by the Jews. They really actually couldn't stand him. And so he had hoped that someday he would, you know, be able to get out of the province of Judea and be able to go somewhere else or to be promoted to a higher position and that kind of stuff. But basically, Pilate had two responsibilities as a Roman governor. Basically, his responsibilities were to keep the peace and to collect taxes. Those are the only two things he was really responsible for. Keep the peace and collect taxes. That's what the Romans wanted him to do for where he was. And so in the midst of all this, and Pilate being there and being the governor of Judea and trying to keep the peace and just collect taxes, Pilate has an encounter with Jesus. And this encounter with Jesus changes everything. And so I want to look at that, the encounter that Pilate has with Jesus, because I think there's a lot that we can learn from this. So in John 18, verse 28, is where we're going to start off. Jesus' trial before Caiaphas ended in the early hours of the morning, and then he was taken to the headquarters of the Roman governor. And his accusers didn't go inside because it would defile them, and they wouldn't be able to celebrate the Passover. Two things I want to point out here. First of all, Caiaphas is the high priest, so he's the main religious dude at this point. But something that's interesting is that these religious people, they didn't want to go inside of the headquarters because they were afraid it would defile them. They would come in contact with possibly Gentiles, and they would be unclean and unable to observe Passover. But isn't it interesting that they want to remain clean in the eyes of God, all the while they have the Son of God that they're trying to have murdered? It's crazy if you think about it. Verse 29 finishes off, "So Pilate the governor went out to them and asked, 'What is your charge against this man?'" Now, we know from Matthew, tells us in chapter 27, verse 18, he says, Pilate knew very well that the religious leaders had arrested Jesus out of envy. Pilate knew exactly what was going on, and yet he still asked this question, "What's your charge against him?" And basically, the religious leaders had their way of doing things. They had these rules they had set up, and it was real easy to tell where you stood in the order of things. It was easy to exclude people, and you could be holier than thou because you followed these rules better than anybody else. And it was just a certain amount of like order and just, you know, exclusiveness and superiority that went along with the way that they did things. And then Jesus came along and started wrecking all of that. I mean, Jesus would hang out with just anybody. And there were people who were nothing like Jesus that liked Jesus so much. And that made them so mad. And then Jesus started saying, listen, like, it's not about just following rules. It's not just about a religion. It's about a relationship. He said, and actually, a relationship with me is way more important than just trying to follow rules and hit notches on this. And they hated that, because it's so much more difficult to figure out where you stand. And when Jesus is inviting everybody, then that feeling of superiority disappears. And so they had to get rid of Jesus. They're like, we've got to get rid of him. He's got to be gone because he is ruining the way that we are doing things. And they wanted it the exact way that they had been doing. And so it continues on in verses 30 through 33. They said, "We wouldn't have handed him over to you if he weren't a criminal," they retorted. "Then take him away and judge him by your own law," Pilate told them. "Only the Romans are permitted to execute someone," the Jewish leaders replied. And this fulfilled Jesus' prediction about the way he would die. And then Pilate went back into his headquarters and called for Jesus to be brought to him. And this was Pilate's first point of indecisiveness. This is where he begins to have to make a decision. He's either going to stand in favor of the truth or seek to win favor from the crowd. Because we know from what the Bible tells us that Pilate knew what they were up to. He knew Jesus was innocent, and yet still he decided that, you know what, I'm going to have to make a choice to either stand in favor of the truth or seek favor from the crowd. And so he asked for Jesus to be brought in. Verse 33 and 34 saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" he asked him. And Jesus replied, "Is this your own question, or did others tell you about me?" That seems a little weird at first that Jesus would say this. And if you kind of look at it just at a glance, it seems like Jesus is just going, well, I mean, is this a question that you want to know, or is this something they told you to ask me, right? But Jesus doesn't just ask questions to hear himself speak. There's a purpose behind all of it. And what he's doing here is he's forcing Pilate to reconcile for himself who he believes Jesus to be. Because it matters who Pilate sees Jesus as. Because if he looks at Pilate and he sees someone who is trying to claim to be a Roman king or even a political king, then Pilate's got the right to have him executed. Pilate can sentence him to death and have him crucified because that's insurrection and he's supposed to keep the peace. Remember, keep the peace, pay your taxes. But if Jesus isn't claiming to be a Roman king and isn't trying to gain political power, and he's a Jewish king trying to gain spiritual power, then Pilate has a big decision to make. Is he going to stand in favor of the truth, or is he going to seek favor from the crowd? And this is where he gets stuck. In verses 35 and 36, "Am I a Jew?" Pilate retorted. "Your own people and their leading priests brought you to me for trial. Why? What have you done?" And Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not an earthly kingdom. If it were, my followers would fight to keep me from being handed over to the Jewish leaders. But my kingdom is not of this world." And the religious leaders, they just want to confuse Pilate. They just want him to do the dirty work for them. So they trump up these charges that they bring against Jesus. And so they say that he's misleading the nation, that he's telling people not to pay their taxes to Caesar, and he's claiming to be a king. And so Pilate's like, okay, well, I gotta look at this, right? And we know the religious leaders don't care about any one of those things. They just want Pilate to do the dirty work for them. So Pilate has to hone in on one of these. And so he hones in on the last one, claiming to be a king. Because if Jesus really is claiming to be a king, like he's trying to gain power, then he has the right to do something. He'd be a legitimate threat to Rome. But Pilate's also thinking, you know what, if I rule in favor of what these religious leaders want, I could also boost my image with them. They might like me a little bit more. And you know what? If I can keep the peace, then I might even impress the emperor and I might even get a promotion out of this. And so now Pilate is in this decision point of if he's going to stand in favor of the truth or seek favor from the crowd. And so he brings Jesus back in and asks him questions in verses 37 and 38. Pilate said, "So you are a king." And Jesus responded, "You say I am a king. Actually, I was born and came into the world to testify to the truth." I want to stop right there for just a second because this is important. When it says, "I was born and came into the world," it's establishing that Jesus is God. "I was born" means that he was born on this earth, being human. "But came into the world" means that he was existing before he was born, which means he is eternal. So he was 100% man, 100% God as he walked on this earth, which is important. "Actually, I was born and came into the world to testify to the truth. And all who love the truth recognize that what I say is true." "What is truth?" Pilate asked. And then he went out again to the people and told them, "He is not guilty of any crime." Now, I don't have strict biblical evidence of this, but from the context and reading into this and kind of seeing where it all goes, I don't think Pilate asked that question, "What is the truth?" as a sarcastic, like, middle school boy would, right? Like, I think he really felt like he was stuck in between this decision point. And he's trying to figure out, what is the truth? I mean, here you are saying one thing. You're saying that you are this king and you've come to save the world. And yet they're saying that you're trying to seek to vie for power. And I've got to make a choice. And I believe the more time that Jesus spent with Jesus, the more he began to believe that Jesus was exactly who he said he was. And we'll see that from Scripture as we continue on. But he's forced into making this decision. And he's got to choose, am I going to stand in favor of the truth, or am I going to seek to win favor from the crowd? Which one of these am I going to do? And so Pilate doesn't know what to do, and so he continues to be indecisive. And so he finds out that Jesus is from Galilee, and so he says, listen, that's not my province. So listen, you go before Herod. We'll let Herod decide what your fate is. And so they send Jesus off to Herod, and then Herod goes, I don't find any reason for him to be, you know, crucified. I mean, he's innocent. So he sends him back. And so Pilate's like, okay, well, what do I do now, right? Like, I mean, I want to stand for what's right, but I also really want to get the favor from the crowd. And so, you know, one of their customs is to offer up one of the prisoners, and that they'll release them. And so He goes, listen, we got this prisoner. He's terrible. Like, he's an insurrectionist. He's murdered. Like, he's horrible. And so he says, listen, I'll release to you either this guy Barabbas or you could have your Jesus. And he's thinking, there's no way they'll pick Barabbas. Like, he's a horrible guy. And they say, give us Barabbas. Crucify Jesus. And he's like, what do I do? I don't know what to do. And so he thinks, maybe if I can reduce Jesus to nothing more than a man. Maybe if I can just help them see that he is just a man and no threat to them or to Rome, then this will be over. So he has Jesus flogged. And a lot of times the flogging would be so severe that people would die just from that. So he has Jesus flogged, and then he brings him out. This is what we're going to pick up in verse 4 and 6. Pilate went outside again and said to the people, I'm going to bring him out to you now, but understand clearly that I find him not guilty. And then Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said, look, here is the man. And when they saw him, the leading priests and temple guards began shouting, crucify him, crucify him. Take him yourselves and crucify him, Pilate said. I find him not guilty. And so he tries again, look, here's the man. Beaten, torn down, just nothing. He's nothing but a man to you people. Why do you want to crucify him? Just let him go. I find him not guilty. And he's just stuck. He doesn't know what to do. And it continues on in verses 7 through 12. The Jewish leaders replied, by our law, he ought to die because he called himself the Son of God. Oh, there's the truth of what they were doing. And when Pilate heard this, he was more frightened than ever. And he took Jesus back into the headquarters again and asked him, where are you from? But Jesus gave no answer. Why don't you talk to me? Pilate demanded. Don't you realize that I have the power to release you or crucify you? And then Jesus said, you would have no power over me at all unless it were given to you from above. So the one who handed me over to you has the greater sin. Then Pilate tried to release him, but the Jewish leaders shouted, if you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar. And anyone who declares himself a king is a rebel against Caesar. So the religious leaders are saying, look, you either do what we want you to do, or we're going to tell your boss. We will get you fired, and we'll get somebody in here that's going to do what we want them to do. And I firmly believe that as Pilate looked at Jesus, he really began to believe that Jesus was exactly who he said he was, that he was the Son of God. But he really, really wanted to win the favor of the crowd too. And so when it came down to it, he chose to seek the favor of the crowd over standing for the truth. Because when it came down to it, he decided that what he wanted was more important than Jesus. I don't know about you, but have you ever been in that same situation where you've been faced with a decision or you've got to choose to either stand for the truth or to seek the favor of the crowd? And maybe you've been faced with the same question that Jesus asked of Pilate. Is this your own question or did others tell you about me? Do you really believe that I am who I say I am, even if it costs you? And I think this is something we've got to reconcile for ourselves, because Jesus, if Jesus is really who he says he is, then that changes things. And we see from Mark tells us exactly why Pilate released Barabbas, had Jesus flogged and handed him over. It says in Mark 15:15, wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them. He had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. And so when it came down to it, Pilate had a chance to stand for the truth. And yet he chose to seek the favor of the crowd because he decided that what he wanted was more important than Jesus. He chose to win the favor of the crowd, and this is a crowd that despised him, by the way, that cared nothing for him. And I think Pilate knew Jesus was innocent. I think he really did. I mean, he declared it several times. He's not guilty. I find him not guilty. He's not guilty. But he chose to ignore what he knew for what he wanted. He even chose to ignore his own conscience, knowing that he was not guilty. He even chose to ignore his wife, which was probably the biggest mistake he made of the day, right? I mean, When I was about to get married, I remember my dad took me, put his hands on my shoulders and said, "Son, that woman you're about to marry, listen to her, because she's going to see things before you ever will. She'll have so much wisdom to give you." I was like, okay, you know, I mean, I kind of get that, right? But there was a story that my mom would tell me as we grew up. My dad was a pastor, and she would tell me the story. She'd say, you know, hey, there was this young pastor who's married, two little kids, and there was a single lady in the church who was younger, and she called the pastor later one night and said, "Hey, there's a light bulb out in my house. Can you come over and change it?" So the pastor's like, "Yeah, you know, wanting to help, wanting to do the right thing." And as the wife found out what was going on, she's like, "I'm going with you." And so the wife loaded up her two kids, went with the pastor to help out this lady. They get there, and guess what? There are no light bulbs out, right? And so I was telling this to my wife right after we got married. "Hey, this is what my dad told me, you know, and there's the story that my mom used to always tell me." And I was telling her that story, and she goes, "Brandon, you realize that story is your mom and dad, right?" I was like, "You've got to be kidding me." Like, I'd heard that story my entire life, and my mom never revealed that it was her, and I was one of the little munchkins that got loaded up late at night to go to this lady's house. Like, I never knew. And it's like, okay, so I get it now, right? Like, maybe my wife will see things before I will. Because we know from Scripture that Pilate's wife sends him word that says, "Hey, listen, I've had a dream about this Jesus that you have in custody, and you need to let him go. You need to have nothing to do with him. I'm telling you, let him go." And yet he chooses to ignore that. And so he ignores all those things. And it's so easy to look at Pilate and go, "Dude, how did you not see it? I mean, you yourself said time after time after time, he's not guilty, and yet you still chose to hand him over." But again, how many times have we been faced with the exact same decision? To either stand in favor of the truth or to seek favor from the crowd. And Pilate chose to reject Jesus, and I don't think it was based off of an intellectual choice. Some of you are here this morning, and you've not made the decision to follow Jesus, and it is. You're trying to work through some questions you've got about who Jesus is and what that means for you and what that would look like to follow him, and that's awesome. Continue to ask those questions. Keep seeking after what the truth is, absolutely. But most of us don't reject Jesus based on an intellectual stance. We reject Jesus based on a moral stance. We don't want to stop doing what Jesus says we should stop doing. Or we don't want to start doing what Jesus says we should start doing. There are some people that it's just easier not to love, right? So this is what Pilate does. And listen, if we're a follower of Jesus, we have to make this choice every day. Choosing to either stand in the truth or to seek the favor of the crowd. And it can be easy here to go, "You know what? I'm going to stand with Jesus. Like, I want to do what's right. I want to stand with Jesus." But what about tomorrow when you go to work? And you walk into the break room, and there's a crude joke being told, and they turn to look to you to see what your response is. Or you walk into the schools tomorrow, and you're walking down the hallway, and you see somebody who's being mistreated, an injustice happening, and you choose whether to stand for the truth or to seek favor from the crowd. What about when you're with your group of friends and they're talking or doing or whatever, and you have a choice to either stand for the truth or to seek favor from the crowd? And I mean, don't we love it when somebody gets this right? When somebody makes the right decision? What about when a company or a corporation actually makes the right decision to do something great? I mean, how much money is given up every single Sunday just because Chick-fil-A chooses to be closed on Sunday? I mean, we could just go ahead and move over and just have worship at Chick-fil-A, and then there would be no arguments after church. We would already know where we're going to eat, right? I mean, we could solve so many disputes just right there, right? But isn't it, yeah, free Chick-fil-A, that would be awesome, right? But isn't it so fun to see when somebody does the right decision, they stand up for something, you're like, yeah, that's right. I mean, they made that decision of our people need a day of rest. Like, we're going to choose to stand on that, even if it costs us money. But here we are, 2,000 years later, still struggling with some of the same decisions that Pilate struggled with. Am I going to stand in favor of truth, or am I going to seek the favor of the crowd? And we know Pilate just wanted to please the crowd. We see that in Mark 15:15. Just to satisfy the crowd, he released Barabbas and had Jesus handed him over to be crucified. And we see that Pilate decided that what he wanted was more important than Jesus. And then Pilate tries to exonerate himself from the whole thing because we know and we see time and time again that Pilate knows that Jesus is not guilty. And so he brings out this bowl of water and washes his hands and goes, listen, my blood is not on, his blood is not on my hands, right? This is your guys' doing. And he tries to wash his hands and exonerate himself from the whole thing. And we're going, Pilate, buddy, that's not how this works. You can't just wash your hands and absolve yourself from everything. That's not how this works. And we're like, how dumb could he be? And yet, how many times have you or I done the exact same thing? We see something at work that's not right. We see a discrepancy. We see something that's not moral, not legal. And we go, I got a family to take care of. I've got bills that I've got to pay. And we wash our hands, trying to absolve ourselves from standing up for the truth. Or we see somebody being mistreated at school. And we go, that's not my problem. I'm not the one mistreating them. And we wash our hands, trying to exonerate ourselves from it. We stand in a group of our friends, and we hear them talk about things and do things and plan things, and we don't say a word. Because what if I lose some friends if I stand up for the truth? What if I get uninvited to some things because I stand up for the truth? What if I lose my job because I stand up for the truth? And we're put in the exact same situation that Pilate was in. Are we going to stand up for the truth? Or are we going to seek favor from the crowd? And listen, I get it. It's difficult, right? But we got to make this decision. John 19:7-11 says, the Jewish leaders replied, by our law he ought to die because he called himself the Son of God. And when Pilate heard this, he was more frightened than ever. And he took Jesus back into the headquarters again and asked him, where are you from? But Jesus gave no answer. Why don't you talk to me? Pilate demanded. Don't you realize that I have the power to release you or crucify you? And then Jesus said, you would have no power over me at all unless it were given to you from above. Isn't it interesting that Jesus said nothing in order to save us? And yet so often we say nothing in order to save ourselves. And I think Jesus was trying to help Pilate out here. He's going, but you're trying to win favor from a crowd that doesn't even like you. And the only power they have is the power that God has allowed them to have. And guess what? The only power that you have is the power that God has allowed you to have. And it becomes a lot easier when you begin to realize and know who you are and whose you are. Every time I would walk out the door as a teenager, whether it was to go on a date or to go to work or whatever, my dad would say, hey, son, don't forget who you are. And I go, how could I forget, right? Because you tell me that all the time. But when you know who you are and whose you are, there's a lot more clarity to the decisions that you make. Because you see, the needle of what truth is based off of the crowd, it's always changing. Just as soon as you feel like you've aligned yourself and you're aligned and where you need to be, it shifts. But Jesus' truth is eternal, and it's never changing. And you never have to try and catch up to it. You never have to try and figure out where it is. You know exactly where it is. We're supposed to love God and love people. And sometimes that means making decisions that aren't popular to stand with the truth. But we never have to do it alone because he is always right there with us. Out of fear, Pilate chose to win the favor of the crowd rather than stand up for the truth. And in about AD 36, Pilate was recalled to Rome where he disappears from official Roman history and we see nothing else of him. He was grasping at straws, trying to win favor from people that didn't even like him, that didn't even care about him. He just wanted to hold on to what he had. He just wanted to reach that next level. And the whole time Jesus is going, buddy, you're looking truth right in the face. And you're looking at the one who has the real power and the real authority. Trust me, because I can see the whole picture. Trust me with your life. At my last church, my wife and I led a small group of juniors and seniors, and we had three senior guys who it came time for prom. And one of the big things at prom is that there they would rent this party bus. And so it was a big deal if you got invited to be a part of this party bus. And so they would get this big thing rented, and if you were invited to it, you'd pay your part, and they would take this party bus to prom, and then it would be fun, right? They would leave from the prom in the party bus, go to somebody's house, and change into clothes, and then get back on the party bus that was rented until about 2 a.m. in the morning. And it was known that there was tons of alcohol that was provided for them on the bus, a bunch of underage kids. But this was it. And one of the guys who was in our group had just made a decision to follow Jesus a few months earlier. And as we were talking about this, and they're like, Brandon, we don't know what to do. Like, this is something we've been working for, and yet we don't know if it's right. And I remember this student who had just made the decision to follow Jesus. He's like, you don't understand. My whole middle school and high school years, I've been working to be accepted, to get to this point. And I finally made it. But Jesus. And I just can't reconcile if, like, this is what I want, but I'm pretty sure that that's not what Jesus would have me to do. And they argued, you know, but we can get on there and not make any bad decisions, and we can take a stand for the truth right there. And I go, yeah, that's possible. It's not probable. And so they wrestled with it, and we talked through it, and they asked a bunch of questions, and we asked them a bunch of questions, and they had to make a choice. Because as they had already kind of been talking to their friends about this, they're like, hey, bud, listen, we don't care whether you get on or off. You're already on the hook for the money. Like, you owe us for your portion of this party bus. So you can get off if you want to, but you're still going to have to pay. And they were worried about some people. Some other people had said, well, I mean, we're Christians too. Who are you to judge us? Like, do you think you're so much better than us just to get off this bus? It took ridicule from them. It's some people who go, listen, we don't even care. Get on the bus, get off the bus, whatever. They had money on the line. They had friends on the line. They had status on the line. And it would have been so easy to just get on the bus and just go. But they had a choice to make, to stand in favor of the truth or to seek favor from the crowd. And they left our house that Sunday night, and we had no idea what decision they would make. And we prayed for them that week, and, you know, just that God would give them the strength and the courage to stand for the truth. So we went to bed that Friday night, not knowing what was going to happen. About 12:30 that night, we got a phone call. I picked it up, and I go, well, great. I'm sure they're probably all in jail now, right? So I'll be headed over there. And just as I answered, hello, you know, we did it, we did it, we did it. And I was like, you did what? What did you do? Like, I'm thinking again, okay, the police have been called, we're going to jail, right? I said, but I heard this chorus of voices, obviously on speakerphone, and said, we got off the bus. And it was so awesome. Just for them to make that choice, to give up the money they'd already invested into it, to give up the friends for the ridicule that they would face, even in face of all of that, they chose to stand for the truth rather than seek favor from the crowd. They went on that night and went to Waffle House till 1 o'clock in the morning and played games with each other, you know, like Xbox and all that stuff, till wee hours in the morning. And you know what? The next day they said, we had so much fun last night and we remember every bit of it. And we didn't puke this morning. Yeah, right? It was awesome. And then in the following weeks, they lost friends. They lost money. But people began to come up to them. Teachers, school administrators, friends, other peers, and said, thank you so much for doing that. I wouldn't have had the courage to stand up for what you did. Thank you so much for deciding to do what was right rather than to choose what you wanted. It's not easy. It's not easy to stand for the truth. It's not always easy to stand up for Jesus, but you're never having to do it alone. He's always there to give you the courage. And maybe you're thinking, you know what, I've made too many decisions in the past where I've made the wrong decision. That's okay. Ask God for forgiveness and move forward. It's not about what you've done in the past. God can forgive you of that. It's about what you're going to choose to do from this day forward. Are you going to stand in favor of the truth? Or are you going to seek favor from the crowd? You're going to get an opportunity this week. Something's going to pop up, and you're going to have to make a choice to either stand for the truth or to seek favor from the crowd. And you're going to be in that place, the same place that Pilate stood. And you've got to decide, is what I want more important than Jesus? Am I going to do what I want more than what Jesus wants me to do? Am I going to stand in favor of the truth? Or am I going to seek favor from the crowd? Let's pray.